So last week we talked a little bit about benevolence. We got into that topic. I want to go back over the first few things that we mentioned and then really focus on the responsibility of individual Christians this morning. The local church is to provide for needy saints. Well, let's take a step back. What does the word benevolence mean? We use that like, you know, everybody just uses it in every sentence. What does that word mean?
Just caring for those in need.
Yeah, that's assisting those in need. That is what it is. Absolutely, Les. Did the early church do that? Yes, they did. And they were very good at doing that. Remember, as early as Acts chapter 4, and we'll talk about it somewhat in the next hour as we talk about Barnabas, Lord willing. You remember when the gospel was taught on Pentecost in Acts chapter 2, you had thousands of people obey the gospel, and soon after that, more and more obey the gospel. Those people came to Pentecost as Jews who were expecting to be there for that feast, and then do what?
Go home.
Yeah. Well, then they come there, and their whole lives are changed. They hear the gospel taught. They are baptized into Christ. These people are Christians now. The thing is, they didn't have a New Testament they could just carry around in their back pocket. If they wanted truth and they wanted to hear the words of this new covenant, where were they going to get it? From the apostles. Where are the apostles? In Jerusalem. So what do we see many of these new Christians doing? They just stay. And do you blame them? I don't either. I would want to stay too. But does that bring some challenges with it? Now all of a sudden, you know, millions of people would have come into Jerusalem for a feast like that. Now you've got, I think we can safely at least say thousands and thousands of people who normally wouldn't have been there perhaps. You're going to have some problems come from that?
Yeah.
Food problems and shelter problems and just various things. So in order to take care of that, Acts chapter 4, we see brethren, and Barnabas certainly is one who specifically mentioned, they own land and they take it and sell it. And they give the proceeds to the apostles so their brethren can be taken care of. And just let it sink in. You know, how hard is it today to part with our stuff? Especially something like land. I mean, let's just be honest. What if it's something that's been in the family for a long time? That's not something you just up and want to part with. But for the sake of brethren, you see Christians selling these things to do good for them. The early church certainly provided for the needy among them. 1 Corinthians 16, I've got you there. We talked about last week how God set aside an act of worship to help make this kind of benevolence possible. Certainly we do it on the first day of the week. The collection, the giving, the offering, whatever you want to call it there. It's this laying by in store of how we've been blessed. And let's just go through a couple of points we made last week quickly. First, we'll read verses 1 and 2. 1 Corinthians 16. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, so you must also do. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. A couple of interesting things to point out there. The very first clause of verse 1 is the collection for the saints. Very, very important to make sure that we emphasize that. I have given orders to the churches in Galatia, so you must do also. Is it a command? It is a command. This is something that Paul expected the saints to do. It's to be done regularly. Right? We talked about that last week. Regularly being when? First day of the week. Yeah. It is to be done individually. How do you know that from these verses? Let each one of you. It's to be done proportionately. How do you know that? As each one has prospered. You may not give what I give. I may not be able to give what you give. That's okay. That part is between God and me. He knows how He's blessed me this past week. And I know, too. And that's what that giving is based on. It's not a comparison or a competition between one another. It's to be done as each one has been prospered. What kind of heart is it to be done with? You go to 2 Corinthians for that. 2 Corinthians chapter 9.
Cheerful.
Yeah, a cheerful giver, not to be done begrudgingly, right? Not to be done as... And it's interesting, it is a command, but it's not to be treated as a matter of necessity with the rolling of the eyes and the begrudging, oh, here we go. It is something, and I hope, as we just said in our prayer, if we realize what blessings we've been given, it shouldn't be that hard. It really shouldn't be that hard to give a portion back to the Lord. That should be something that comes easily, and we want to do. And I think it was Matthew last week when they were presiding over the table said, you know, we think of all the spiritual blessings that God has given us. Here's something physical we can give back to as a thank you. And certainly it'll never make up for the things that He's done for us. But it is one way physically we can give back. I thought it was a great point that He made. Now, turn to 1 Timothy 5. And we've had sermons on this recently, so I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this section of the local church as a collective, as our responsibility. We have talked about it. But 1 Timothy 5, there are limitations placed on what the local church's benevolence was to include. For instance, the local church was not to be burdened to provide for widows when their family could take care of them. First Timothy 5, you'll pick up verse 3. Honor widows who are really widows. But if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and to repay their parents. For this is good and acceptable before the Lord. Whose job is it to take care of my mom? It is my job. It is my job. And that is who was expected to do it first. And not only children are listed here, who else? Grandchildren. Yeah, it was the responsibility of family to take care of them first so the church wouldn't be burdened. Whenever money for benevolence is taken from the collection, it always goes to needy saints. And those are two factors that make it up. Not just saints, but saints in need. And not just anybody, but saints. So we see those things. Look at an example. Go to Romans 15. Now again, in this instance, we're talking about money taken from the collection. The treasury, if you want to use that term. Romans 15. Look at verse 25. Well, I tell you, let's actually go back. Let's go back to set. That's fine. 25 is fine. It gives us enough context. 25. But now I am going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints. For it pleased those from Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor among the saints who are in Jerusalem. So Paul, going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints, what had the saints in Macedonia and Achaia wanted to do?
Wanted to make a contribution to those poor Christians.
Yeah. Yeah. To the poor among the saints who are at Jerusalem. That meets both of those things we talked about, right? Were they in need? Yeah, absolutely. The poor at Jerusalem, were they saints? Well, I gave that one away. We're told very clearly these are Christians. So both of those points are made there. Now this, and let me just say this, because it's an issue that local churches will always be dealing with. This should show us that the Lord never intended for the local church to function as a social agency. He never intended the local church to be a health clinic or a country club. That's not the purpose. What is the purpose of the local church?
Spread the gospel.
To teach the gospel of Jesus Christ, to build up the saints, and if there are needy saints, to take care of them. Right? Those are the things that we have the authority from Scriptures to take care of. Now, that being said, as individual Christians, what are we to do?
Care for anyone that we have the ability to care for.
As we have ability and opportunity, we're to take care. So sometimes when you make a statement like that regarding what the collection is for, somebody will say, well, you just don't like people. You just don't want to take care of people. I can't believe y'all hate people like that. That is not at all the point being made. The point is, there's a difference between what I may do with my funds and what the church has been authorized to do. Now, and we've talked about it before, there have been complete strangers who have come up asking for help from this congregation. We don't know if they're saints. We don't know. They could worship Satan for all we know. We have no idea, right? They just walked up out of thin air and they have a legitimate need as best we can tell. Do you just say, you just kick them in the rear and say, get out of here. We don't have time for you. Has that ever happened in the history of this group being here? What happens? Who takes care of it?
Individuals.
Individuals do our best to provide for that need. So does the need get taken care of? Yes. We love the people. We're simply trying to do it based on the authority that we've been given in the right way. So let's talk about that. To make sure that we keep doing that and meeting needs, it's going to require a certain type of heart. We talked about that earlier with giving, but this is certainly going to require it as individual Christians too. Steve, did you put those?
I was just going to say that actually it's more caring the way we do it. It's not too hard to give something that's not yours, not in your pocket.
Yeah.
But when you give it out of your pocket, it's actually more caring and more giving.
Yeah, it is a sacrifice, certainly. Turn to Luke 10. Let's spend some time talking about the Good Samaritan. Starts around verse 25 in Luke 10. I'm going to go through about verse 37. We are to be like this Good Samaritan. Now, I know you're familiar with the account that we have here, but I want to go back through it. It is good and certainly a ton of lessons we can learn from it, especially in assisting those who are in need, the kind of heart, the kind of attitude we're to have. And it's actually kind of funny the way it runs together like this. We're going to talk about some of these same things in the next hour, Lord willing, when we talk about Barnabas, because it's some of the same heart that you see here, you're going to see in Barnabas. Luke 10, starting in verse 25, could someone just read through 37 for us? Let's just look at the whole account.
And behold, a lawyer stood up and put him to the test, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to him, "What is written in the law? How do you read it?" And he answered, "And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live." But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" And Jesus replied, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among the robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was. When he saw him, he had compassion, and went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, 'Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back.' Which of these 3 do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers?" He said, "The one who showed him mercy." And Jesus said to him, "You go and do likewise."
Thanks, Chuck. Let's go back, first of all, and talk to the lawyer asking this question. And when we say lawyer in this sense, this is a man who was supposed to be a master of the law of Moses. He was supposed to know it. And we find out that he does know what it says, right? So let's go in and look at this a little closer. What shall I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus, I love the way Jesus gives him the answer here. He says, "Well, what does God's word say?" And so he repeats it, right? And there is Chuck read for us in 27, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." 28, Jesus said, "You're right. Now go do it." So there's our first lesson, right? You can have knowledge of what you're supposed to do, but until you do it, it's not pleasing to God. Just knowing you do right is not enough. It actually has to be done. Here's the thing in 29. Does this man know the answer? The lawyer. What's the problem? And what can you tell? What is he doing in verse 29?
He's trying to see what answer Jesus is
going to get. It seems like he's trying to get around it, isn't he? He knows what it says. He just said what it says. And love, let me quote him exactly. "And your neighbor as yourself," which would be love your neighbor as yourself. So Jesus says, "Well, go do it." Well, who's my neighbor? So here, looking for a loophole, right? Because surely that didn't include anybody who's not a Jew, right? Yeah, it did. And Jesus uses a Samaritan to make that point. So here you have a man who knows what he's supposed to do, but he's trying to get around doing that. Can we be that way? Can those in the religious world be that way? Yeah, we need to realize this is not something that just happened 2,000 years ago. Well, notice the Samaritan. We mentioned earlier, as we have an opportunity to do good. He had an opportunity, right? He just happens to be traveling along, and he sees this man who is traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. Thieves set upon this man, and they rob him and beat him. They strip him of his clothing. He is in bad, bad shape. But before we talk about the Samaritan, there were two other people who had an opportunity to do good, right? And these would be two people you would think would do it. The first one is who?
Priest.
Do you think this priest understood what the law said about these things? Probably better than anybody, right? Well, he knew. I don't know if we can say he understood. He was familiar with what it taught. And yet, what does he do?
He goes out of the way and gets on the other side of the road.
Now, by chance, a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Wow. Wow. We're talking about a heart that wants to get in there and get involved and help others who are in need. This one wants to stay as far away as possible from this opportunity. So he passes on by. Well, the next one, 32, is a Levite. Well, should Levites have known these things? Right? They did a lot of work assisting the priests. They were familiar with what the law of Moses taught. When he arrived at that place, he came and looked. So, for me, this one's even worse. Because, I mean, a guy laying over there in the ditch looks bad enough. But then you go over and inspect him and realize what shape he's in. Then you decide to go and leave him. That's even worse. This is another man who should have known. Well, then, of course, the Samaritan in verse 33 comes by. Samaritan, who these other two guys, the priest and the Levite, would have looked at as being a dog and just barely a human being. And yet, what does he do? What is specifically said about him in 33 that stands out to you?
Yeah, compassion.
Yeah, compassion. It all comes down to compassion. When he saw this man who, from everything we're told here, the man who's beaten, left from Jerusalem and went to Jericho, seems very likely that this man is a Jew. And yet when the Samaritan looks at him, he doesn't say, "Oh, Jew." What does he see? He sees a human being in need, absolutely. And he has compassion on him. So he does. As he has the ability, he takes him, puts him on his own mount, takes him to an inn, verse 34. He actually does what he can to take care of him there. He bandages him up as best he can. Then he carries him to an innkeeper. He gives him 2 denarii and tells him, "You take care of what he needs, and if it goes over this, when I come back again, I'll cover that too." So he prepares for what he can there. He gives him into someone else's care who can take care of him, and he's willing to provide for whatever is needed there. Absolutely compassion on this guy. What does he know about this guy? He's in bad shape. That's all he knows about it. Norris, go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is just a good example of us, that most people look at a title of somebody. You know, a priest, we know him from a personal preaching, but like you say, it's the heart of a person. You know, he could be somebody that has a job and making way less money or whatever, that you could help somebody and somebody have more. So much stuff that we view as people, as how we look at people, their jobs, status, and things like that, or their position. But like you said, Jesus always showed the heart of somebody. Yeah. He cares about people, not, you know, like we always say, you know, about the widow with her situation. You know, she gave less, but you expect somebody who, other people made more money than her, but she gave out, you know, out of her heart. So,
yeah.
You know, those types of things like that we can't always go on what we see, and, you know, like things like that.
Yeah, great examples.
In verse 35, I had not, I've read this over and over many a time, and I really had not taken to account how important take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back. That's even more important than I've ever first thought of, because the Samaritans leave himself vulnerable. As the way a lot of Jews treated Samaritans, this innkeeper could have taken advantage of him. He did not put a limit on how much money he would have to repay back. He's just going to do it.
Yeah.
And that just shows how much love he has for this guy or this person. regardless of, you know, it doesn't matter how much it's going to cost, I'm going to take care of you.
Yeah, and he certainly shows a certain level of trust in the innkeeper to do right by him as well. Yeah, great point. Good. Turn to 2 Corinthians 8. Do you want to be like that? Do you want to be like that? Do you want to look for opportunities, and when they come, do you want to be ready to help others who are in need? I hope we all say yes. What is it going to take for me to get to the point where I will be like that? What are some things that are going to have to happen? 2 Corinthians 8, I think one of the first things that's going to have to happen is we're going to have to be consecrated to God. Now, what is that? That is one of those fancy religious words. What does consecrated mean?
Devoted
to? Yeah, set apart for special service. Devoted is a great word. 2 Corinthians 8, look at verse 3. No, go back to verse 1, because this does set the context. 2 Corinthians 8, verse 1. Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed upon the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we should receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And not only as we had hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. So let's just work our way back. Physically speaking, the brethren in Macedonia who are wanting Paul to take this gift from them to help other needy saints. Physically speaking, what kind of shape are those brethren in? Verse 2 really gives us this picture there. Deep poverty, the New King James says. So they don't really have any extra. And yet, what do they still do anyway?
Yeah.
And notice how in verse 4, the New King James starts with the word imploring. And it goes on to say, with much urgency. What does that mean?
They insisted.
Yeah. They are begging or insisting, Paul, take it. Take it. And Paul, you can just imagine him there when he looks and he sees what kind of situation that they're in. He said, look, you guys, you can't afford it. Take it anyway. We want to give to our brethren who are in need. What does that say about these brethren?
Huge hearts.
Yeah, what moves them to do this?
They gave themselves to the Lord.
They gave themselves to the Lord. They, as Les mentioned, they were devoted entirely to the Lord. Is this going to inconvenience them? You better believe it is. But somebody mentioned love. They love their brethren. Even before that, they love the Lord. And they've devoted themselves to Him. That's how they're able to do these things. You go a long way when you do that. You devote yourself to the Lord. And you love Him. And you love your brethren like you should. This stuff will get taken care of. It will take place. It can become second nature. When we say churches of Macedonia, we're talking Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea. Likely the three that are mentioned here. They don't do it begrudgingly. Remember we talked about 2 Corinthians chapter 9. They do it because they want to. Drop down and to verse 8. Someone mentioned love. I speak not by commandment, but I am testing the sincerity of your love by the diligence of others. Of course, he's using the example of the Macedonians for the Corinthians to show the kind of heart that they need to have. See, the Macedonians had this heart, and you guys need to have it as well. Do we love others enough to share the blessings that we have with them? Has God blessed us physically? And let's just say, in this case, we're especially talking about physical blessings, the aid that was going to be sent to needy saints. God has blessed us greatly. Is there a temptation to be miserly with it? For keep it to yourself, for you and yours. And how do we get past that? Because I mean, it's a real threat. How do we get past that, Joe?
As you just stated, if you love the Lord, you know what He has promised you. So you don't get hung up on what you're going to need to get by tomorrow. He has promised you that
I'll take care of tomorrow. Your responsibility is now. And if you have that kind of heart, it is called giving selfishly, unselfishly. And when you give up what you have, I take that to be kin to the way we, every day we take care of our family. Nothing get in the way of us providing for our children. If I have $5, and that $5 I've set aside for lunch money for next week, one of my children need it now, I don't even think of next week. I'll find another way to deal with next week when next week comes. And I think that's the attitude that he wants us all to have.
That requires trusting God. Doesn't it? It's harder to do than we might acknowledge sometimes. Well, I think we struggle with it more than we should. And part of that may be because we live in a society where we're so blessed physically. We have so much stuff. And we get used to having stuff. And we like having stuff. And we can convince ourselves, you know, I worked hard for this. I put in a lot of time. I mean, I worked to get to this position. I worked to through those years of school or whatever it was. I did this and I did that and I did. Yeah. But who allowed me to be there? Who allowed me the health to be able to make it that long? Who allowed me all of these things? It does go back to trusting God and trusting that He will do as He said. And I can't help but when you talk about this, can't help but going back to Matthew 6. And this is that whole thought of, why are you worrying about these things? Why don't you trust God more? It starts in verse 25, but really the part that hammers home is in 33. But seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Therefore do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. Trust Him. He's trustworthy. Trust Him. What about when Paul's getting stoned outside of Lystra? You think he trusted the Lord? And what did he know? Because basically that thing's going to end one or two ways. When they start hurling rocks, he's either going to die or he's going to live, right? Not a whole lot of in-betweens. If he dies,
going to
be with the Lord. If he lives,
continue working for the Lord.
I'm going to keep serving the Lord. He trusted the Lord either way it went. Either way, he trusted Him with his soul if death came, and he trusted Him with his entire life and his dedication, his devotion, to use that word again, if he lived. I've got to do that. And I've got to get better at doing those things. Chuck, go ahead.
Giving can also be discouraging at times also. When I was a teenager and this congregation met over on Perry Street, there was somebody came in off the street wanting money. At the time I was working, making $4.32 an hour. I felt sorry for the guy, gave him $10. Felt good in my heart, I did the right thing for him. The very next week, I saw him sitting on the sidewalk drinking whatever out of a bag to drink. You know, drinking a bag, you know, a bottle in a bag, whatever, some kind of alcoholic, whatever. And my first thought was, I was mad that this guy had done that. However, he has to answer for that. I did what was right in my heart.
Something else we're going to talk about in the next hour. Will people take advantage of you in this world? They will. They will. Does that excuse me from doing what's right to the best of my knowledge?
No.
And that's what can happen. This world is full of people who serve Satan, and they don't even know it. They may not even believe in him, and yet they serve him. They do those things that he wants them to do. Are we going to run into them? And if you go outside of your house, and maybe even if you stay in, it's going to happen, right? So what do?
The best you can.
You keep doing what's right. You keep doing what's right. Now, we're to be wise too, right? Harmless as doves, but wise as serpents. Now, Chuck saw this guy doing that. The next time this guy comes to Chuck and says, "Can I have $10 more?" Chuck's probably going to be a little more discerning and checking things out, because you need to be wise. I mean, don't be foolish. God expects us to not be foolish. But on that first time, what did Chuck know about it? Nothing. He was motivated by trying to do what was right. And that's on him. That is on him. Don't let people's mistreatment of you and others keep you from doing good for everybody and for others. Because what can happen? We see that stuff enough. We can get so jaded. And we see a guy there. Well, he looks hungry. He's probably faking. I bet he drove a Mercedes up here and he parked it around the back. Now he's out here in some rags. I'm not even going to try. We can get jaded. Better not. I don't know. And I can't judge hearts until I see actions. Then we can. But we need to do what God expects from us. Go ahead.
I have also seen members, actually of this congregation, when someone came in wanting food, they offer to take them to go get food rather than just handing off money. And that has impressed me over the years.
Yeah, in that regard, and one thing I'd recommend, because we usually it's strangers that we have, you can do things like buy gift cards to restaurants and things like that, or you can buy gift cards to Walmart or Kroger and things like that. That's one of the things we've started doing, because I am a little leery about handing cash to somebody that I don't know. If I don't have any other options, I'll do it. But you give them that, they got to use it for what? I mean, you give them a McDonald's card. Maybe that wasn't the best example. Somebody be like, well, you killing them worse than anything. But anyway, you give them a card for food. They're going to have to use it for that. So I think that kind of goes in with trying to be wise as best we can.
The McDonald's may be better than the Walmart or the Kroger because they can't get beer or wine at Walmart.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Matthew, go ahead.
You know, when we talk about this, we also have to remember we're supposed to be good stewards over the things the Lord. We have a commandment to lay aside, and that should be the first thing. When we see our paycheck, that should be the first portion. But we've also been commanded to take care of our neighbors and treat them as ourselves. And when it comes to that, I think sometimes we can take the offering on Sunday and be like, that's our responsibility of monetary value. But we also need to consider when we see those things, that's also something commanded in the Lord. So that should be, well, I got a few extra $100, maybe I'll go get a Falcons game. Maybe if I set this aside one day, there'll be a brother in here. Or maybe it's an opportunity in which I'll have this extra money. And somebody who's not faithful, it could be an opportunity. They see your willingness to help. It's an opportunity to teach. I think sometimes we'll take the excess that the Lord gives us and go ahead and say, well, it must be for me. I'll spend it on there. When we can lay aside for ourselves in the future, because we don't know what hard times will come for us.
Yeah.
But we also don't know what's coming for other brethren or other people who are complete strangers. And it's always good to be able to have that, because only good can come from that. If you're able to help somebody else, at the very least, you're doing what the Lord's commanded, and it's good unto you, as he said, that so many more examples can be taught like that.
Yeah, good. Jeff?
And it doesn't necessarily just have to be money. I mean, you see somebody with a flat tire on the side of the road,
time.
Help them out.
Yeah.
Carry somebody's groceries. It's a matter of helping your neighbor. It doesn't say you have to give them money.
Yeah, right. This is going to require being attentive and getting rid of tunnel vision, right? And looking and seeing the kind of needs that come up. Mike, go ahead.
Well, it's that when we look at that person sometimes and we have that thought in our head, you know, we have that jaded view. Is this really going to be what they need, or are they trying to take advantage of me? What I need to keep in the back of my mind is Matthew 25, when Jesus said, I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat, and I was thirsty. And whatever we do to the littlest, we don't want to miss that opportunity to actually help that person and not hear that answer.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody takes advantage of us, so be it. If we have to make sure we get this right.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to hear that. We don't hear, I was hungry, and you gave me nothing. That's why sometimes you get taken advantage of, and
so
be it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would rather get taken advantage of and hear well done, good and faithful servant, than save some money because I was so shrewd. And Jesus says, you know, you had an opportunity to give to me when I was in need and you didn't do it. Well, when did I miss that, Lord? When did I not give you what you needed? Because you were so jaded that you stopped looking at people. You saw them as potential for loss instead of souls in need of a Savior. I think we can do that. And that, unfortunately, I think our society can push us in that direction. All right, let's move on. I want to get through this section best we can. We've got a few more minutes. 2 Corinthians 8, verse 9, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich," and this goes right in line with what we've been talking about, "yet for your sakes he became poor, that you through his poverty might become rich." And you've got a mixture of physical and spiritual points being made there. Certainly the riches that he brought were not physical riches for saints. They were spiritual ones. They were forgiveness of sins. With this idea, we talked about it not this past Friday night, the Friday night before. Gratitude. Do we appreciate the things that God has blessed us with? And just quickly, list some things that God has blessed us with.
Health.
He's given us health. Allows us to be here this morning.
Jobs.
He's given us jobs and income. I mean, we're talking about the ability to give. He certainly blessed us with that. What else?
His building.
Yeah, just places of comfort. Sure.
Family, loved ones.
Family. Our immediate family, our friends, loved ones as well. Brethren, certainly we put that aspect in it. What else?
Everything.
A way to salvation.
Forgiveness of sins. An opportunity for those of us who, the first time we sinned, what happened to our relationship with God?
Severed.
He creates us in harmony with him. And then when sin happens, it's severed. What does Jesus provide? A line back. It brings us. It atones us. And we talked about that word atone. If you split it in half, it's at one. He atones. He brings us at one with God again. That's why he died on the cross. We have those blessings. When we think of those, and we could see it for the rest of the morning and name them. When we realize those, it should help. We should be grateful. And that should make these other things a whole lot easier for us to do. Go to Galatians 6. We'll look at one more thing. And granted, many of these go together. As Christians, we should be a sympathetic people. When we look at others and we see others in need, we should be sympathetic toward them. Galatians 6, verse 2, and this is especially true regarding brethren. We are to do that with all mankind, but as with everything, brethren are another step. They are the first ones that I should look to be sympathetic toward. Galatians 6, verse 2, "Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ." Does God require it? Yeah, he takes this stuff very, very seriously. So, am I sympathetic toward the plight of others? Here is a way, and especially my brethren, I think here's a way I can gauge that and sort of measure myself. How often do I think of you guys during the week? As a group, and as individuals, do you cross my mind during the week? And I'm not talking about Sunday when I see you, or Wednesday night when I see you. I'm talking about when we're not together. Do I think of you? Are you on my mind? Because if you are, that's a good sign that I am sympathetic toward whatever you're going through. And I'm loving you like I should and wanting to be involved. Look, 2 Corinthians 9. Well, before we go there, if we all need help sometimes, we all need help. It may be physical, certainly spiritually, we all needed help. We couldn't have done anything without Jesus. So in that regard, at least, we needed help. What can make us struggle with being sympathetic? How can that become difficult? Go ahead, Ben.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, how so?
If it's not conditioned to do it right.
Oh, now there's a word. Are you conditioned? Is your heart conditioned to do the right thing? Is that a thing? Does your heart have to be conditioned? You better believe it. And how about, let's put another one with it. If your conscience is not conditioned to do the right thing, can your conscience be wrong? Just ask Paul, right? In good conscience, I was persecuting those Christians left and right, dragging them out in the street. When we condition it rightly, that's going to help us. It'll make it a lot easier for us to be sympathetic toward others when our hearts and our consciences are conditioned. By what? How do you do that? I mean, you go work out? How do you run a 5K? How do you get your heart? Well, okay. you can condition a certain type of heart by running a 5K. That's not the heart we're talking about, right? How do you do this one? That heart of the Spirit, that inner man, how do you condition it? Okay, you do it through practice. Good. What else? What standard? This. You use this standard to condition it. You do that, and by practice, you work it. Just like the physical heart, it gets stronger and stronger and better able, better equipped to do these things. Good. I tell you what, that's good. That's good. I think we've covered everything I have. Any last points you guys want to bring? We've actually gone past time, but that's okay. Any last thoughts? Okay, thanks for the discussion. Good points you guys brought up.